Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 40, we discuss strong viewing numbers for the Premier League on NBC Sports so far this season, the staggering number of soccer games on TV and streaming this weekend, feedback on Turner's plans for the Champions League, as well as Univision making inroads on La Liga in the United States. That plus much, much more. And of course, we've got your listener mailbag with questions and comments from you, the listeners. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaya. Kartik, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. Well, we had the special bonus podcast last week with the news about Turner, and we'll get more into that a little bit later in terms of some of the feedback from you, the listeners. But for those listeners who haven't had a chance to dive into the show much in the past, instead of analyzing every single big talking point, transfer story, match itself, what we do is focus in on the experience of watching soccer on television, talking about the commentators, the TV production, everything including the streaming options that are out there, as well as all of the latest news that are going to affect you, the listener, in terms of your soccer watching experience, no matter what league you watch. It's primarily for the United States, but we do dive into topics from around the world too. So if you do have any feedback or questions, let us know. We're here to answer you guys and give you guys some feedback. So Kartik, let's start off by talking about what you've been watching this past week.
Yeah, it's obviously been an interesting week with all the transfer discussions, the start of the Bundesliga season, everything going on. So we'll dive right into it. Friday, kickoff of the Bundesliga season, you had Bayern hosting Bayer Leverkusen, a club you and I are very familiar with, a club that we visited a year and a half ago, close to 2 years ago at the beginning of the 2015-2016 season. And this was a disappointing game for the first 20 minutes or so. Then Leverkusen down 2-0 really began to start playing, and maybe we're unlucky that they only lost 3-1. They were the better team for much of the game after they fell down 2-0. Good job by Ross Dyer, who I'll get to a little more about Ross Dyer in a few minutes. Ross Dyer and Stu Holden calling this game. I thought the Fox studio of Kate Abdo, Ian Joy, and Eric Winalda was outstanding to start the season. Brought us into the season really well. And then great call by Ross Dyer and Stu Holden on this match. Stu Holden, I think, is more comfortable in two-man booths, but that's a conversation we're going to continue to have for 9 months, right? Yeah. Going into the World Cup. But I thought they were very, very solid in this game. At the same time, I was watching Burton and Birmingham with John Champion. Nigel Clough's side is, and now they've won, I think, in the League Cup also this week. They're punching well above their weight in championship football. And it was fairly improbable. They stayed in the division last season, and looks like they're well on their way to staying up again this season. So that was an enjoyable game. Now, the next morning, and unfortunately, Chris, you probably missed the commentary. You were watching it at a pub, but Peter Drury had to go solo for a while in this match, and that was probably the best part of the match from your perspective.
I was watching at a pub, but I still could hear the commentary in the background. And about 18 minutes in, I'm like, wait a second, like someone just joined Peter Drury. And I guess I didn't realize, because when you're in the pub, it's
was it 18
experience.
Minutes? I didn't time it, but
yeah,
it was, yeah,
18
was
minutes,
like
and it was Kevin Coban. I guess he was stuck in traffic. Whatever happened, maybe on the M4, I'm not sure, but that was pretty funny. And actually, I checked Kevin's Twitter account later that day to see if he posted anything there, but he didn't say anything, so he's probably hoping that everyone forgets about it. But it's happened before. I can't remember. It has happened before in other games I've watched where the commentator comes in late.
Does it happen more often in Swansea games or in games in the Northeast? Because I'm just thinking remote parts of the country, maybe.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. It might have been abroad someplace, but it has happened before. And actually, oh gosh, there's probably the listeners probably can remember some good examples of ones that are kind of high profile ones that have happened where the commentators didn't show up or they were stuck in traffic. I know in the World Cup in Brazil, there were problems in terms of trying to get everyone there to the stadiums in time, especially with all the flooding. I think the ESPN made it okay, but it was interesting. And actually, I think Peter Drury and Kevin Coban kind of I think they joked about it for a minute or two. But in some ways, Peter did a great job by himself for the first 18 minutes.
Yeah, I thought he did very well, and unfortunately, the game wasn't so good. Swansea, they made a move this week, getting Sam Klukas. That should help. Yeah. A good left-footed midfielder, and they need some help. That's pretty obvious. Wolfsburg-Dortmund was on Fox right after that, on FS1, and that was Ian Joy doing the match, calling the match this time. Johan Karovsky took his place in the studio alongside Eric Winalda and Kate Abdo, and it seemed pretty seamless. Karovsky, who was, I would say, poor, average to poor most of last season, was much better in this cameo that he made. The game was well called by Ian Joy. This game was not competitive. Dortmund blew them out of the water. Christian Pulisic, the American, having scoring the first goal of the Bundesliga season for Borussia Dortmund, who are without Dembele. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen there, but as of now, as of this recording, Dembele is still on Dortmund's books, and they're holding out for – and why not? I mean, Barcelona's desperate. Why not hold out there? Interesting discussion after the match. Eric Winalda thinks Mainz, who've been a solid mid-table slash – top half of the table club the last several years under first under Thomas Tuchel, and then the last few seasons since Tuchel moved to Dortmund, could be in serious relegation trouble this season. Then they had Schalke Red Bull, Schalke RBL, RB Leipzig. I do that subconsciously, by the way. I don't do that on purpose. Derek Ray was calling the game, so very good call. This match wasn't so good, and Schalke got a victory, which gets their season off started well. I mean, I think we all know that Leipzig's going to have a hard time. They're going to have it's going to be a tough act to follow this season for them. So,
hey, Kartik, on the Bundesliga, before you move on to any of the other leagues or any other matches you watched, it's tough because I watched the Bayern Leverkusen game on the Friday, and yes, the studio team was fantastic. I thought Ian Joy is really kind of in his element, especially next to Ronaldo. I mean, they know that league inside and out, and you can tell Kate Abdo, being a German speaker and also following the league very closely. Great find there. So studio's fine, commentary's fine. You got Stu Holden. My issue, Kartik, is just the level of competition. We go right back to where we were with the Bundesliga in the past before the first game, and I'm watching this game, and I'm like by halftime, I'm just, it's over.
I mean, it looks like the league got to address, because I mean, Bayern, this is the problem. Bayern feels like they've fallen behind Real Madrid and Barcelona. They're probably not behind Barcelona anymore, but they feel like they were neck and neck with those two giants a few years ago, and they've fallen behind, and so they're making, in some cases, vanity purchases. I think Hamas is a vanity purchase, a marketing purchase. But it's pushing them even further afield from the rest of the Bundesliga. I mean, last season, Leipzig ran them close for a little bit over half the season. There was a stretch of games where Bayern kept getting results with stoppage time equalizers or winners. Mm-hmm. And that's when they pulled away from Leipzig. But Leipzig was within 3 to 5 points until that point in the season. And then the previous season, obviously, Thomas Tuchel's Dortmund team had a record for BVB points haul, more than the years they won the championship, the back-to-back years under Jurgen Klopp, or previously had won the championship under Otmar Hitzfeld in the 1990s. And yet they still finished like 10 points back or 8 points back, something like that. So, the competitiveness at the top of the league, I would argue the league is much better. Maybe not much better, and we'll see what happens this season. I would argue last season the league was better at the bottom than the Premier League. I mean, mm-hmm. You take Bournemouth, who finished ninth in the Premier League, and I think they might have been relegated in Germany. And Southampton was a very poor eighth. They finished with 46 points. But this season, I think the Premier League has made the kinds of buys from outside the league, from the continent, that will improve the rest of the league. And if the rest of the Bundesliga doesn't improve, then I think there's going to be a little interest in the league. We'll get to the TV ratings in a little bit. Ratings were marginally better, but it's still – I mean, when you start at such a low basement, it's easy to improve ratings, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, Kartik, is that the numbers were up. We'll get more into that in a little bit. But it's like kind of the same old story. And unfortunately, I mean, you look at the Premier League, you look at the opening game of the week, the season. Arsenal against Leicester, kind of a back and forth. Yeah, a lot of defensive mistakes, but you mean a 4-3. The next game is Watford against Leicester. I mean, Leicester. Watford against Liverpool, and you mean Watford came back. And just in the Bundesliga, just the Bayern so far ahead. It just in terms of the viewing experience, it doesn't make me want to keep on coming back to it.
And I think entertainment is a big factor. Look, Dortmund may have been the most entertaining team in Europe late Klopp years, early Tuchel years, but part of the reason was they were playing that, and we're seeing it now with Liverpool, right? They concede a lot of goals. Dortmund games last season were ridiculous, and that might have been part of the reason Tuchel got sacked, among other reasons, boardroom intrigue, etc. Peter Bosch now comes in from Ajax, and I think they're probably going to shore up their back line, which is going to make them less entertaining. This is, again, a conversation, and we've had it for a couple of years. Alexi Lalas and Eric Winalda threw it out the second Fox got the Bundesliga rights. Would people be moved in this country by quality or by entertainment? Because they would both argue that the Bundesliga is a higher quality league than the Premier League. I've argued that, too, the last few seasons. I'm not sure that'll hold this season. But the viewers respond to entertainment. They want to see goals. They're not necessarily checking out tactical. They're not a tactical geeks like a lot of us, or wanting to see necessarily the crisp midfield passing that maybe some of us relish. And I think the passing, the shape, the tactics tend to be better in the Bundesliga than they are in the Premier League. Yeah. But that's not what people respond to. I mean, it's funny because a lot of analysts, Chris, after that Leicester-Arsenal game, I mean, you just turned to ESPN FC and you'd see Shaka Hislop and Craig Burley talk about how bad they thought the Premier League was, what a bad advertisement for the Premier League they thought that game was. But then, as you're saying, people were moved by it because it was entertaining.
I completely disagree with that, especially in terms of Fox's question as far as do you want quality or entertainment. I don't want either of them. I want competitive games. I want to watch whether it's the Premier League or I mean, in this case, the Bundesliga. I want to watch.
So to you, Man United scoring three goals. I mean, again, it was against Swansea, which tugs at your heart. But scoring three goals like that on lightning quick breaks, that's not entertaining to you. That's not what you want.
Right.
Even though it might be a neat move to watch.
Yeah, and to me, it gets boring. I mean, so I look at Bayern Munich. When I watch Bayern Munich play, yes, they're a fantastic team in the Bundesliga and in the Champions League, but they're boring because they almost always win their games, and it's such a canter that the other teams can't keep up. I would much prefer to watch kind of a Watford Liverpool game or an Arsenal Leicester game in just those examples where it is more competitive. It's back and forth. Any of those teams can win, and with the Bundesliga, that's the thing that stops me from watching more of it. Well, there's so much soccer to watch, but that's one of the reasons is it's not that competitive in that league. I mean, the Premier League, yes, you look at Man United running away with it so far, but there's a long way to go, and it could be six or seven teams that could win it.
Yeah, there's seven teams that could win the Premier League this season, in my opinion. I don't think Arsenal's going to win the league, so let's say there'll be six teams, but there's six teams that could win the league. I'm including Everton in that, by the way. But yeah, I mean, by October, we'll think that there are only three teams that can win the league. And but we're still having that conversation. Yeah. We're not having the conversation in Germany. I mean, the only real conversation we're having in Germany, two conversations are, will big teams like Wolfsburg and Hamburg continue to get sucked into relegation battles every season?
Yeah.
And can Borussia Dortmund under Bosch, who's come in from Ajax, who's a rare non-German manager, by the way, in the Bundesliga, can he come in and bring Dortmund back to an elevated level, maybe in European competition? Maybe we're not even talking about challenging for the Bundesliga title. We're just thinking maybe Dortmund, because they qualify for Europe every year, maybe their focus has to be to try and win a Champions League here at some point, rather than trying to win the Bundesliga, because as crazy as it sounds, it might be easier for Borussia Dortmund to get by Real Madrid or Juventus in a one-off game if they can get that far than trying to win the Bundesliga, as insane as that sounds.
Yeah, and in the Bundesliga, the season seems to be over within the first 20 minutes. It's just like they're so far above Leverkusen, which is, I mean, going through some tough times as it is. I don't know. We can talk about the Bundesliga all day long, which I do enjoy the league. I do enjoy the skill level, the crowds. There's a lot of attractive things to it. It's just that when I watch Bayern Munich, I just get bored just because they're so much better than the other teams.
But and I have a friend who listens to this podcast who I know is listening right now who turned the game off after the 20 minutes and just watched the Birmingham game. I had it on my computer at the same time, but basically said, yeah, the season was over. He'd watched the championship because it was more competitive, and I totally get that. So anyway, moving on, watched obviously the second half after the Schalke Red Bull game didn't Schalke RBL game didn't necessarily do the trick for me. I switched to the Stoke Arsenal game, which was interesting. I mean, I tended to think that Hesse might have a hard time settling in the Premier League. That was a bad decision, a bad statement by me internally with some of my friends. And he looked a terror in that first match. He's a player I liked at Real Madrid. Was surprised. Yep. He never quite cut the mustard there. I don't know what happened at PSG that they've now sold him or loaned him to Stoke, but. PSG is a different kettle of fish, right? I don't know what necessarily what they're looking for in a striker, but he looked very good in that game. I thought NBC's coverage was good, but again, and we're going to get to this in a minute with Hercules Gomez coming on the ESPN FC show and their thing. There seems to be a difference in how Arsenal is viewed on NBC versus ESPN, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. Huddersfield Newcastle, John Champion was outstanding. It was a great game to watch for me because I like watching Huddersfield. I like David Wagner and Aaron Moy had a cracker of a goal, a very, very fine performance from him. And the real question, one of the big questions in English football right now is what's going to happen to Newcastle United, what's going to happen to Rafa Benitez, how is this club ever under Mike Ashley going to be competitive? Obviously, I think everybody thinks the best thing would be if the rumors are correct and he sells the team at some point soon, that would be the best thing. But until then, that will be a consistent talking point. And I feel like that was the crew's talking point throughout much of this game. Then
Kartik, and also Newcastle lost in the League Cup last night. Yes. Against Nottingham. Yes. Forest. So that's right. Three games that they've lost.
Yeah, and there is there are some theories out there that Benitez has money to spend but doesn't want to spend it. I don't necessarily believe that. I think that there is obviously something going on with Mike Ashley. We saw his comments a week ago about how he's not a sheikh and he doesn't have that kind of money and all of this sort of thing. So, look, if Rafa walks. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very hard for Mike Ashley to get the fans back on side. I think he knows that, which is why he hasn't made the move yet. He hasn't sacked him or forced him out, but things are going to come to a head pretty quickly. Spurs, Chelsea. I thought that Arlo White and Lee Dixon had a good game, but let me address a concern you've had in the past. I went ahead and timed this. We had a minute and 13 seconds of pregame from the time Rebecca Lowe threw it over to Arlo White. Now, it's different when it's an NBCSN Sunday game than the Saturday games that start abruptly on NBC. Mm-hmm. At 12:30 12:30:00 on the watch Saturday Eastern time. So about a minute and 13 of pregame, Arlo White talked through that pregame. 21 seconds into the match, he introduced Lee Dixon and said, he's my partner, blah, 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 blah. But then continued talking. And Dixon really didn't say anything until a minute 16 into the match. And then from that point, it was flowing pretty well. Dixon, as usual, made some very, very good points. And I thought Arlo White had a good game. But that just speaks to your concern about the way he cues up broadcasts. I mean, he could do a solo broadcast. He might have been more equipped than Peter Drury to deal with that situation in Swansea.
Yeah, and he's probably done that in the past, I would think, too, either for BBC Radio that he's done or some of the Seattle games, or I'm not sure. But
well, there was a game that he did, a U.S. Open Cup game between Seattle and the L.A. Galaxy. Classic game in 2011, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Where his solo call was kind of a thing that is etched in people's minds, at least in minds of MLS fans, as this just great call, epic call of a big game between, you know, maybe the two biggest teams in the league in a cup, cup semifinal, can't remember exactly, but he's done it. I mean, at least stateside, he's revered for it. But you might be talking to a different audience when you're talking about the Premier League. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Than MLS. In MLS, he was very popular for it.
yeah, it's a very American style, and it's not even just very American. It's just very conversational, which is okay at times if it's a really boring match and there's nothing much going on and you're trying to kill some time. But when it's, you know, Spurs Chelsea, and or in previous examples in previous weeks or previous years, you don't have to talk that much. I mean, it's yes, you give the kind of the opening, but the opening doesn't have to be that long.
Spurs Chelsea speaks for itself, right? The top two clubs in the league last season, Wembley. I think you're dealing with an educated fan base. Now this might be the situation where, again, we criticize Major League Soccer, and we're going to get into it on our featured topic of the week, for trying to win over casuals. Is Arlo White trying to win over casuals or American soccer, American sports fans who might happen to turn on NBCSN or NBC over the air, in painting a picture of a match and giving facts and details that educated Premier League fans already know? Could that be it?
Well, that's a great question, Kotick. We'd have to go back to the tapes of him for the Seattle Sounders and doing MLS games and finding out if he did the same thing back then that he does today. I mean, again, we're in the fifth season of NBC's broadcast, so we've had 4 years of Arlo White given kind of the minute-to-two-minute kind of openings and overlooking some of the things happening during matches. So that hasn't changed. I think in many ways that works well for new listeners or new viewers to the Premier League. But I don't know. We would have to go back to the tapes and see if that's something that just inherently that's his style, or if he's kind of been instructed to do that.
So NBC had an interesting weekend. I think Match of the Day 2 was aired Sunday night and was really, really good. Kyle Martino and Robbie Musto were on the couch, and Martino made a great point about how impressed he was by how quickly Chelsea picks up new ideas and how Conte can make a tactical tweak or two even within an established formation, and it works. He can do it on the training ground midweek, and Saturday, Sunday, they're ready to play in that formation. There was some good additional analysis from Robbie Musto on the physicality of the match and how Spurs at times were not able to match that level of physicality despite having a guy like Wanyama in central midfield who was so good last season and seemed to get bossed at times in this game. Although, look, the analysis is based on the result. I mean, I think Spurs were the better team, but that's been the case. Look, I've said this. People who follow me know that I've been saying for 3 years Spurs are the best team in the league, and yet they never win anything. So they're the best team a lot, and there are a lot of games where I've watched where they've been the best team and they've not won or they've not gotten 3 points over the course of Pochettino's tenure. So it's a little bit frustrating. And again, they would not be in the position they're in without this manager. But it seems like in big matches, there's just something that doesn't happen for them. But that's a conversation for another day. ESPN FC, that same night, same time as Match of the Day, too, actually, was a rare combination of Adrian Healy, Steve Nichol, and Brian McBride. No Craig Burley, no Shaka Hislop, no Ali Moreno. Healy did well as a host, I thought, I think our biggest complaint about Adrian Healy is that he's very defensive of U.S. soccer and Major League Soccer. When the topic areas are not Major League Soccer or U.S. soccer, he's pretty good. And he was very good on this show. Hercules Gomez came on after the first segment where McBride and Nichol dissected all the Premier League matches except for one. Gomez came on to discuss La Liga, Bundesliga, and then Arsenal, MLS and Liga MX. They couldn't have the Arsenal discussion without Hercules Gomez. Everybody wants a part of that. Again, I think I said this the previous week. I think the producers at this show, this might be a great question for our friend Steve Polise. They relish when Arsenal loses. I mean, it's like all their commentators, everybody's chomping at the bit to discuss it. Mm-hmm. And they gave some very good analysis. But again, it's a very different approach towards Arsenal than NBC has. I really like this particular show because I think it showed ESPN's versatility when they don't have the big guns. You know, Burley and Hislop, I think we would consider the two real big guns from that show in terms of heavyweight analysis. But they had they were able to do a very good show without either of those two guys.
I think one of the differences that comes to my mind is that ESPN FC is probably more going to go for hot takes or hot opinions. versus, right, say, NBC, that's going to be more of kind of level-headed analysis. And yes, they can be critical, and yes, they can be pro-Arsenal in certain ways. But maybe that's the difference in terms of just almost like a different type of style from both of them, which is kind of why they're kind of differing in styles in terms of their analysis of Arsenal.
Yeah, it's also how the hosts drive the show. Mm-hmm. Again, this was Healy, who was a little more indulgent of the commentators on the set. But Dan Thomas and Seb Salazar were very provocative with the questions they ask, in a manner that I think brings out that a little bit of that hot take, which I enjoy. And then actually Monday, I'll get to Monday in a minute. The Man City-Everton game on Monday, Liam McHugh was hosting for NBC. No drop-off from Rebecca Lowe. He had another good performance. He's a pro. Mm-hmm. He brought in Martin Tyler, and I thought it was Martin Tyler and Danny Higginbotham, and it was interesting. Martin Tyler made the eclipse reference on air live for the U.S. audience right as the eclipse was going on. So I thought that was really neat because I had my glasses on and was ready to run outside.
Was that
Martin Tyler did.
Was that pre-match?
That was pre-match.
I missed the pre-match.
Yeah, it was about 2:10, and McHugh brought them both live from the set, from the game, as they do on Mondays.
Right.
And he made that reference. McHugh then had Bauer on, and we haven't seen Steve Bauer all season. So that was a sight for sore eyes for me, and Bauer was very good. They spent about 10 minutes discussing various issues, particularly Coutinho and the situation at Liverpool with Coutinho. So that was excellent. It was a good game. Guardiola and Koeman know each other about as well as two people in football can, respect each other as much as two people in football can. So Everton, Man City matches are always cagey. Transitioning to ESPN FC.
Wait, Kotick. I have to ask you. So I missed the pre-match, and I think I caught the game right as it was getting ready to start because I was, I don't know, walking my dog or something. I can't remember what I was doing. What about the Tunnel Club? So how did that look on television, and what are your thoughts about that? And for listeners who don't know, Manchester City has redesigned their players' tunnel, where it has see-through glass, and they've sold seats or subscriptions to fans.
Yeah, I thought it looked pretty tacky, personally, but that's with all these kind of fans gulping beers, watching the players come out, it was pretty... I thought it was pretty odd, but maybe it's something we'll get used to as the season goes on. Apparently, it's pretty common in American sports. In fact, I'm not surprised by that. I think this sort of thing's been going on for years in American sports. And what we're finding with Manchester City in particular is because of financial fair play. They're trying all kinds of ways to monetize things, mm-hmm, without raising ticket prices on their average fans, because Manchester City still has one of the lowest average ticket prices per game in the Premier League, at least among bigger clubs, and they still have a working class supporters base. They're not going to do what Arsenal has done in terms of ticket prices, or what Chelsea is going to do with the new stadium, or Tottenham. So I think they're looking for ways to generate additional revenue from their supporters, including this official supporters group now that they've been soliciting me to join, actually, an official club-sponsored supporters group, which to me is really bizarre. Hmm. But they've been soliciting me since my birthday 3 weeks ago, sending me first the supporters club wished me happy birthday, and then they've been asking me to join for £40 or something like that a year and get all this and all this access. So they're looking for other ways to generate revenue. I get it. I'm not necessarily a fan of it, but I totally get it. It looked tacky. So this was interesting. Ian Dark was on ESPN FC, hosted by Ross Dyer, which was cool to see just a few days after he called the Bundesliga game on Fox. And Ian Dark said, and I keep saying it, you know, Chris, you know this, I tweet every time at the start of every season, Man City starts minus 6 points because they have to play Everton twice. Or this is their bogey team. Don't read too much into anything that happens today. Ian Dark said, we turn up at the stadium every time Manchester City plays Everton, and we say, hey, it's just history. And then every time they play, Everton either beats them or draws them. Mm-hmm. So it is instructive. Historical bogey teams are instructive, and Manchester City has, other than when Everton was being managed by Roberto Martinez, has had a horrible time, no matter how big the gap is in wages, and the gap is coming down right now with the money Everton's spending with their new ownership. There is Manchester City has a traditional problem against Everton, it's kind of that second derby between Liverpool and Manchester, which are rival cities, right? 30 miles apart. It's not Man United and Liverpool, but there has been a derby feel, and there's also been a lot of just personal connections between the clubs from guys like Howard Kendall on in, guys that have played for both clubs or managed both clubs, a lot of shared history. So, and I think shared experiences versus the big red clubs in their towns. So it always is a lively derby. Ross Dyer hosting was kind of cool on ESPN FC. Dan Thomas was back on Tuesday, so they were back on their kind of normal schedule. But Dyer had, McBride and Nickel with him, and Gab Marcotti and Ian Dark, as we mentioned, joined from London. Marcotti joins from London also. And it was a really good show. Ian Dark, this is interesting. So Ian Dark is able, Chris, we've seen now in the last year and a half, I would say actually started the year before the Euro, so maybe it's been 2 years now, has been able to come on the ESPN FC program as an analyst and do more than just give news, really kind of analyze what's going on and give a perspective that he doesn't necessarily give when he's giving commentary. Mm-hmm. Now, when he's giving commentary, maybe he's pushing the co-commentator's buttons to say exactly what he's saying on the show, but it makes me think Ian Dark at some point, if he doesn't want to be the lead commentator in the broadcast booth for matches up at the gantry, could be a studio host at some point, or studio analyst.
Yeah, a studio analyst, I can see, because he's definitely he's not yet getting any younger,
right,
but it is
right.
One of those things as far as travel and wear and tear on your body. I could see him being that type of analyst, coming in from week to week, and he's one of those types of guys too that I think a lot of soccer fans respect him for, not only his personality but also his knowledge. I mean, he's and when you think about it, Kartik, even during commentaries of matches for years, he's always in a lull in the game. He's always kind of talking about transfer stories, or did you see this rumor, or this or that. So I think for ESPN FC as an analyst, he's perfect for that.
Why is it that we're holding Arlo White to a different standard than Ian Dark? Ian Dark does a lot of that on air also, but maybe it's just the way they open matches is different. When I think about it, because Ian Dark does do a lot of talking on the air as well.
He is more conversational too, which is one of the reasons why I think he became such a, not only a cult figure in the United States, but Go-Go USA was kind of the tipping point of that. But I mean, a lot of US soccer fans, myself included, have a lot of time for him. He is more conversational, but his style, I think, is, to me at least, is more conversational during lulls in the matches later on. So it's not going to be 2 minutes of talking nonstop, and you're missing the action, and you haven't introduced the co-commentators yet. He is conversational, but in a different manner where you don't realize it as much, and then you kind of get sucked into him and Maka having a really kind of some banter, or kind of a laugh, or something to kind of brighten up the actual match if it is a little bit has a bit of a dip.
Yeah. So that was good on Monday. Then Tuesday, this football's just kept coming. Tuesday, Nice played host to Napoli. I was really hoping, I'd love to have seen Nice in Champions League. They had such a strong season last year in Ligue 1, but they got beat 2-0 and got beat 4-0 on aggregate. Mario Balotelli is a nightmare. Got pulled off. I think if anyone is willing to take him off of Nice's hands, they'll offload him now. And Fox studio was very good for this game, and we're thinking about the fact that we're not going to see these games next year on television, right? These third round playing games, if you will, playing ties from the Champions League. And then yesterday was Liverpool and Hoffenheim. I'll be honest, I turned that game off when it was 3-0. Mm-hmm. Turns out Hoffenheim got clawed two back, but didn't really make a difference. And so that was my week. A lot of football on, and I'm sure I missed something in there. But I think there was another. Celtic Astana. I watched a little bit of that match. That was on was that Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesday. I think Tuesday. Yeah. All runs together.
Tuesday. Yeah. That was before Napoli game. Napoli Nice Napoli. But a lot of football. Fox. I mean, I it, it's it's going to be interesting because I'm guessing that the presentation from Turner is going to be better with Champions League. And we talked about this last week. But are we going to miss having access to all these games that we have on Fox? I'm guessing we do, because ultimately we can complain about commentators. We can complain about presentation. We can complain about graphics and production levels. But there's a difference between the match being on and not being on.
Yeah. And we'll get to that in the listener mailbag. We've got a question about Turner, and we'll give some of our thoughts at that point. So, Kartik, in terms of what I've watched this past week, I'm going to jump a little bit all over the place, but Premier League Pass, let's start off with that. So this past weekend, with Swansea playing in the early game on the Saturday, I didn't need to use Premier League Pass for my Swansea game, but when I did get back to my house after going to the bar to watch the match, I did use instead of using Premier League Pass, because there weren't any games on at the 10 o'clock window that I wanted to see exclusively. I wanted to kind of see all of the games, so I ended up watching it on Goal Rush. Now, Goal Rush is not available on Premier League Pass, but it is available on NBC Sports app or NBCSports.com. And being a cord cutter now, Kartik, so I was able to use my Fubo login and to log in to authenticate with the NBC Sports app and then watch Goal Rush through that. So even though I don't subscribe to Comcast anymore, I can still watch Goal Rush. And I enjoyed that, because not only do you get as the goals go in, or any incidents that happen throughout the grounds in that 10 o'clock to noon window, immediately after the 19 minutes was up, you get a Goal Rush goes through and then shows the highlights for every single game from that 10 o'clock to noon Eastern window. So if you did miss a little bit here or there, you get to see everything. So it's a really good roundup.
Here's the thing. NBC, you know, it's these first 2 weeks, and I think they're going to fall into a sweet spot, and they actually did go on Monday after the Everton Man City game, went back through everything, and as I said I watched Match of the Day too, and they went through everything. But on the bridge show, we're Premier League Live, yep, they are not showing every goal or every highlight anymore.
I wonder if that's time constraints.
I think
constraints.
It's time with too many goals, honestly. I think that's I don't think it's a conscious thing that they've done. I don't think they've said, "Oh, we're gonna steer people towards watching, trying to find these goals on other mechanisms or watch Match of the Day tonight." I think there's just been too much when they've got the need to send. Here's the thing: if there will be times when they have 12:30 games which are not called by Arlo White and either Lee Dixon or Graham Rousseau, and when that happens, I think maybe they have enough time to show everything. What ended up happening this week, and what I think happened last week there were just too many goals. This week I think they had to have a stand up from Dixon and White at Wembley, mm-hmm, right, for 5 to 7 minutes in, yep, that half an hour block they have between the games. And also they do a very good job of if one game is running longer than the others at 10 o'clock, switching to that game, right? Mm-hmm. So that bleeds into their time. But they're not – I think the bottom line, what I'm trying to say, is that they're not showing every highlight. You might be better off watching Goal Rush and just seeing everything without I don't know if they narrate all those highlights on Goal Rush, but seeing that right as soon as the games are over.
Yeah, right after it's over, you get the commentary from those specific matches. So it'll switch from, say, Bournemouth against West Brom, and whoever the commentator was for that one, if it was Gary Taphouse, for example, then they'll switch to, and it's usually about, 2 to 3 minutes each game, and then it switches to the next game, whoever that game was, with that native commentator that was doing that match. So and then Goal Rush itself, then you have the voiceover, so the person that's actually kind of bringing you through the match. This one they had, the main match on Goal Rush was Liverpool Palace, and or Palace Liverpool, and this one, what they did is kind of guided you through the whole match, and then they switched over in case something did happen, as far as Southampton scoring penalties or West Ham United coming back with Chicharito. So it was actually pretty entertaining. I enjoy it, and for me, when I don't have any. You mean when Swansea's my team's not playing, to me it's a great way to watch and kind of catch up on everything that's going on. Now, Kartik, without mentioning the name of the pub, so on that Saturday morning, I mentioned I did go to see Swansea Manchester United. The interesting thing for me was once the Swansea Man United game was over, there was probably about two people in the pub that grabbed their phones and grabbed their Chromecast and then started hooking up on the TVs in the pub or in this pub and then getting ready for the 10 o'clock kickoffs and getting the Premier League pass ready to show that. Because what we found, Kartik, and what we know, is there's so many supporters groups around the United States, and in the last 4 years especially, they've really built up those numbers so that if you were a fan of Everton or Crystal Palace or West Brom or Watford, you name it, the supporters clubs around the United States that would go to their local pub, and the patron, the owner of the pub, would then hook up DirecTV, and you could watch any of the games. Now that that's gone, with the Premier League extra time's gone and NBC Sports Live extra is gone, now people have to kind of figure out other ways. And it was just interesting seeing first person, seeing somebody grab a Chromecast and grab a phone and with the permission of the bar owner, go ahead and get queue up one of the games ready for the 10 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah, the pub you referenced has catered to supporters groups in the past. So I was wondering how they were coping this season. I was looking forward to checking it out, and that's what's happening.
Although technically that's not supposed to be allowed, though. It's the Premier League pass is for residential. It's not for bar owners or pub owners to do. But NBC hasn't addressed this, so I've asked them a couple of times to give me an update on what's happening. Is there a kind of a loophole or an opportunity for bar owners to have a separate service for them that they can subscribe to show all these games? So it's a kind of a black hole right now, and fans are taking advantage of the situation as they should to make sure they don't miss any games if they do want to watch them in pubs. As far as some of the other matches I watched, like you said, Kartik, the Celtic Astana, I saw both of those legs, enjoyed that. Saw the second leg of the Spanish Supercopa between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Watched the Bayern Leverkusen game, Swansea Man United, etc. And then, what else did I watch? The Stoke Arsenal game. So that one would be in a cord cutter now too, Kartik. My local NBC affiliate isn't available on Fubo or Sling or DirecTV now. So for that one, what I did was I went ahead and used Fubo TV to watch the game on Universo. And Universo they have. So I was watched it in Spanish again, which is fine by me. In the afternoon, I watched some La Liga in the opening weekend. So Girona.
How was the presentation on Universo? I'm curious.
It was interesting. I mean, the halftime was hosted by Sami Sadovnik, who we met, I think, a couple months ago, actually.
Former Colt TV, yeah.
Yeah. So we met him. So he was kind of just in that studio set that we did see. So just a small studio, but it was him, Manuel Sol, and I think there's one other person, kind of just them, the three guys kind of standing up facing the camera and then just back and forth as far as some of their analysis. So nothing spectacular, nothing bad, but just kind of straightforward. You mean having some experts talk about the game in Spanish, and the rest of it was great. It was just a normal game, just with a different language for the commentary. So Girona, which is Manchester City's team that they bought in Spain.
Yeah, it's now their sister club, and they actually played them in a friendly last week.
That's right,
which
that's right.
Given us a heads up, so what was happening.
So I saw them play Atleti, and Atleti, I watched this game on beIN Sports and Espanol on Fubo TV, but Atleti was so lucky to even get a point in this game. Girona almost won the match, and then Antoine Griezmann got sent off, but it was actually an entertaining game in a small stadium. Then I watched Sevilla against Espanol. Again, this was on beIN Sports and Espanol. And on the English side, they were having Napoli against Verona. And so they were showing Serie A, while the Spanish one was network was showing the La Liga match. And then for the Sevilla-Espanol game, they were using the Spider Cam during the game. So that was nice. I don't watch the extra that often on beIN Sports, but I did watch it on Saturday night, kind of just watching a lot of the La Liga games.
You know, before you get into that, Chris, sure. I should say I always please make a reminder that I need to watch The Extra more, because it's a fantastic show with great talent, and I never do it. So this is just a self-reminder again.
Yeah, it's a good reminder for me, too, because it is one of those things that it's not on the top of my list, but when I do watch it, I do enjoy it. And on this past Saturday, they had the highlights of all the League One games. And Kartik, I was blown away by the skill level in these League One games and the goals. It was really entertaining. I mean, it was the highlights package. I think Bordeaux especially, I think they came back to tie a game, I think 3-3. I mean, just really entertaining football. Really enjoyed it, especially kind of in the highlights package. Probably for Liga, to me, is probably more interesting because I don't have time to watch every single game. But anyway, they had the Liga games. They also had all the EPL games. They showed all the highlights of that. And then you had an analysis from Gary Bailey, Thomas Rongen, and Cabe Murray in the studio. So I enjoyed it. It's been a while. Watched the Chelsea Spurs game. I watched that in the pub too, so I didn't get a chance to really listen to the commentary that much. And then on the Sunday, watched Deportivo against Real Madrid. Ray Hudson and Phil Shane on that one. Watched the Man City game against Everton on the Sunday, and then caught up actually on the Monday. I'm sorry, and then caught up midweek with some of the Champions League playoff games. And like you, watched Nice against Napoli. I also watched Liverpool against Hoffenheim, and what I did with that one was actually had it on mute. So I was watching the game, but switched over, from the Swansea City app, they have live audio from games. So they had the MK Dons against Swansea on the League Cup. So I was listening to Swansea playing the League Cup and then watching Liverpool against Hoffenheim at the same time. So I'm used to that. I do that quite often. Well, I'll watch something on mute and then listen to something else and be able to multitask and actually take both of those things in. But that's it, Kartik, from my past week of watching and following football.
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate, but and this will get to our feature topic of the week, but there isn't a single game in the US-based league that either of us watched this week.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot on, though, because Sunday...
MLS only had two games on this week. There was no ESPN game. There was a FS1, two FS1 games, no Univision game that I recall. So I think there were only two games.
And then the previous Sunday, there was no games on. I think, there was one game on regionally, which is the DC United game, which had been postponed on the Saturday because of rain. And it had been rescheduled for the Sunday, but that was available regionally, I believe. But nationally, there was nothing on at all, which is kind of strange in terms of the calendar. I mean, you're right in the middle of the season there, or towards the end of the season. So, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, a couple things. Univision Deportes has sublicensed from BN Sports the radio rights for La Liga, Serie A, and Liga. The audio-only distribution will broadcast Univision Deportes Radio in 10 markets across the country and the Euphoria digital platform. So good news for those fans of those three leagues that are all over the air on television on BN.
All right, Kartik, moving on. So some good streaming numbers from the opening weekend of the Premier League for NBC. The first weekend of action delivered NBC Sports Digital's most streamed Premier League match week ever with 38 million live minutes. Live minutes for the seven matches streamed by NBCSports.com and the NBC Sports app were up 24% compared to last season's opening weekend, with Friday's Arsenal against Leicester game delivering 9.1 million live minutes to rank as the second most streamed ever match behind Liverpool versus Manchester United on Monday from 2016. And that had 10.3 million. In terms of the measurement, live minutes, I mean, again, it could be the same person that is watching it and then comes back, or it could be that you're just collecting kind of a mass of minutes. So someone might watch the game for 90 minutes, someone might watch the game for 45 minutes or whatever it may be. But still, those are impressive numbers. They didn't share how many unique people actually watched those broadcasts. But whatever it is, it's working really well for NBC on the streaming platform. And as we'll get to a little bit too on the TV numbers, it's doing well too.
Yeah, so also this week we had on Wednesday the announcement of Major League Soccer announcing the 2017 Audi MLS Cup playoff schedule, and this was very controversial, and I have to give props to MLS. I think they understand now some of what we talk about on this show regularly, even though they won't publicly acknowledge it, that they're having a hard time driving audiences to watch matches on television and get up television ratings on weekends during football season, during American football season. And this is, again, why I think what I hear from so often from MLS defenders, oh, well, you want to change the calendar and we'd be competing with football more. But you'd be competing with football more if you flip the calendar in the first half of the season, which, especially in MLS, because you have playoffs, doesn't matter that much. But what MLS has done with this playoff schedule this year has gone heavy on weekday games. So what you're going to have to start the playoffs are kind of the play-in games, that the 3 versus 6 and 4 versus 5 in both conferences, two games on October 25th and 26th, two midweek games. And then the Eastern Conference semifinal season series, both of the first legs will be Monday and a Tuesday. National broadcast, FS1 on Monday, ESPN2 on ESPN on Tuesday. Western Conference Sunday, Tuesday, and then the second legs will be on a Sunday because they can't they have an international break they have to observe, so they can't push that to a Monday. So Sunday will be the second leg. Then you'll have an international break. And MLS will come back from the international break 16 days later, not 14 days later, 16 days later, again, because they're being smart and they don't want to compete on the weekends with a combination of American football, Premier League, La Liga, et cetera. Tuesday games, and then Thursday games, and then MLS Cup will be a Saturday at 4 p.m., which I believe will put it head-to-head with the SEC championship game on CBS. This game will be on ESPN. Again, SEC championship game is not maybe quite as difficult as going up against an NFL game. I don't know. I don't follow American football ratings. I live in Florida, so I tend to think the SEC is bigger than the NFL, but I know it's not. Nationally, I tend to think college football is bigger than the NFL, but I know it's not. But that's who they'll be competing against. So I think savvy game plan from MLS here, moving to weekdays primarily with their broadcasts, and then because they're observing the international break as they always do in postseason, they're going to essentially have a 2.5 week break instead of a 2 week break between games.
Yeah, I agree. It's a smart move in terms of trying to move these games to be very TV friendly in terms of some big TV numbers. Does it say, Kartik, on there what the kickoff times are? I mean, just roughly. I mean, are they 7 p.m. Eastern? Are they 10 p.m. Eastern?
Some games there are Western Conference semifinal. They have it's just Eastern Conference Championship leg one. Tuesday, November 21st will kick off at 8 p.m. on ESPN. They have that. Other than that, I don't have any times.
Okay.
Times TBD on everything else.
Okay. So that.
Oh, and of course, MLS Cup I mentioned is 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah. So the weeknights could be great as long as we're not going to get a lot of 10 o'clock Eastern kickoffs. I mean, if we can get it into the 7 to 8 Eastern time for kickoff games, other than the West Coast games, of course, but.
An acknowledgement by MLS, because I've been very critical through the years of MLS fans who act as if, and the league itself, who act as if attendance is the sole metric for determining success or failures of leagues. And MLS in doing this is sacrificing some of their attendance because they're going to be weeknight games. And keep in mind, playoff games are games that are often not part of season ticket packages or other flex packs. You have to resell and repurchase those tickets. If you have to resell them if you're the club, repurchase them if you're the fans. They're sacrificing, I think, a bit of attendance to try and get these TV numbers up. And that's what I want to see. I want to see the effort. So I say hats off to them, props to them. They have a lot of other issues that they need to solve to get those TV numbers up. But this is, at least from where I sit, an acknowledgement that the arguments we've made about timings and about attendance versus TV numbers, and MLS fans who are very defensive of the league will always push back on me and say, well, look, our attendance is higher than Serie A. It's higher than Liga. Who cares about the television numbers? No one watches TV anyway now. Everyone's cord cutting, et cetera. I think this is an acknowledgement from MLS HQ. They get our critiques, and they're taking some steps to try and address it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a good move. All right, let's move on to TV ratings and some big numbers across the board this past week. The biggest one was 1 million for Chivas against Puebla on Univision and Univision Deportes Network combined. That was on Saturday. That was the 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight match. In terms of the Premier League, some more big numbers. You had 825,000 people that watched Stoke against Arsenal. That was on NBC, over the air, and Universo combined. For the Spurs-Chelsea game, you had 814,000 people. That was on NBCSN and Telemundo combined. For the Liverpool-Crystal Palace game, 541,000. Swansea-Man United, a very early game, that was 439,000. And even the Huddersfield against Newcastle on a Sunday morning. Huddersfield, with not a big footprint in the United States by any means. Newcastle, that has a strong base, but still, I mean, it's still a smaller club in terms of TV ratings. That one had 289,000 people watching that game, so pretty decent numbers there. Kartik, what about some of the MLS and Bundesliga numbers?
Yeah, so the MLS, the highest profile game that was on this weekend was the Portland-New York Red Bulls game on FS1, and it was also on Fox Deportes. Combined, it only had 138,000 viewers. That's not very good. There was a late Sunday night game, Seattle against Minnesota, decided by a controversial call in stoppage time, 182,000 viewers on FS1. Again, games with Seattle tend to get better numbers. Those aren't particularly good numbers, but better numbers. Seattle, Minnesota, 127,000 for Bayer Leverkusen and Bayern. Bayern and Bayer Leverkusen on FS1 and Fox Deportes. A pretty good number for a Friday afternoon, yeah. All things considered. But that Bundesliga bump didn't necessarily last through the weekend. We had 109,000 on NWSL for the Spirit and the Courage. And that's a number that's kind of becoming commonplace. I think what we've seen through the season is Lifetime has developed helping a core audience, and they're not dipping below a certain number. So that's a very good sign in the first year of that package, and the league is going to expand, and I think things are on a kind of an uptick for NWSL. Really quickly going through the rest, 100,000 for Wolfsburg, Dortmund, FS1, and Fox Deportes, Gladbach, and Univision Deportes, excuse me, Gladbach, Cologne, FS1, and Fox Deportes, 77,000, Schalke, Leipzig, a game I watched, 66,000. Between English and Spanish, Freiburg and Frankfurt, which was the next day, 48,000, and then 7,000 for the New York Cosmos and Indy 11 on BN Sports and NASL. Chris, I mean, and I'm an NASL guy. I worked for the league for 3.5 years. There is zero interest in that league this season, and I think part of it is the Cosmos not being as strong as they've been, and then I just think there's no context around the league. It's just this kind of independent league with 8 teams. They'll have 12 teams next year, but floating out in its own ether, and unless you're a hardcore fan of those teams, you're not going to watch. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, maybe it's better for BN than having repeats of La Liga and Serie A games. I'm not sure about that. I think you could put on a repeat of a random La Liga game and probably get more viewers, honestly.
For sure. I guess for the NASL, it'll help when those games are going to be on BN Sports en Español.
That's going to help.
Those numbers will go up.
That's starting in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so that's coming up soon. All right, listener mailbag. So the first couple of responses we got from listeners was in regards to Turner Sports and the Champions League episode that we did. First one is from Justo Hernandez Montoya. He sent this in through Facebook. He says, it feels like pay-per-view for Champions League before 1994 or Premier League late 1990s, early 2000s. Limiting the number of live games on open TV is backwards. I hope that Univision doesn't jump into this in the same instance. Knockout games should all be available. People don't want to pay for another streaming service. We should see and wait how NBC Sports does this with their concept for the Premier League. Moving on to the next one, this is from Paul. He sent it in through email, and I won't read the whole thing, but he says, why is everybody going to streaming? Why buy the rights and not show it on TV? I just don't get it. NBC showed one live game and 4 streamed games last week. Canada even showed 3 live games. NBC went from showing 5 live games to 1 game. Now Turner are going to go streaming. I've heard nightmares where TVs are on the wall and people can't connect the HDMI stick, even if they wanted to. which I've gone through that before too. It says streaming is never going to be as good as cable satellite. Why not put these games on TV subscriptions, charge higher than streaming on a buffering crappy service? So a couple of good comments from listeners. Actually, I'll read one more too, Kartik. This one was posted on worldsoccertalk.com, I think yesterday, from David Crowley. It says, will I be able to watch the championship on beIN Sports like I did last season? I have no computer service where I live, so online options do not work for me. And in all these cases, Kartik, there are similar threads, because whether it's the championship or whether it's the Champions League, we have to remember that not everybody has not everyone has a computer, not everyone has a really good internet connection, and not everyone everyone's not able to actually stream these matches. Yes, more and more people are. Streaming services are getting better, as are internet speeds, but you're leaving out a lot of people that just prefer to watch games on television. And with Premier League Pass, with Turner Sports and their streaming product for all of the Europa League, except for the final, and about 50% of the Champions League, as well as the Championship with on ESPN3, you're losing a lot of people that normally would be watching these matches. So, Kartik, let's move on to the next.
I think with League Cup also.
Go ahead.
beIN's historically showed second-round League Cup games. I think the point Paul made was especially good. I wonder if at some point we're going to hit a happy medium where the TV, the rights holders, as he suggests, charge higher than streaming to put a game on a TV subscription. If that we're going to get at some point because of just the way the consumers react to this. And I think that might be the happy medium. I think that's a really good suggestion from Paul.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is making sure that you don't leave people behind. So if they do want to watch on television, and we all know that everything's moving towards streaming, but if you do want to watch on television, there should be that option. It's definitely some good
feedback. I'll admit to you right here and right now, and who knows what I'll do in the next few weeks with NBC Sports Gold, because I still haven't bought it. If I were able to use the spillover channels on DirecTV 491, 492, the ones that they used to show Extra Time on, I would have bought it the first day.
Yeah.
But I don't like the idea of having to watch those games on my computer while I'm watching, because it's always going on simultaneously with a game that's on NBCSN or CNBC, right, or wherever. I don't like that idea. If I were able to just channel surf from NBCSN to another television channel, I would have bought it. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think I'm alone in that.
No. I've heard a lot of people say that too. And again, it's not about the price. It's more about the accessibility. And I think a lot of people would have paid more. Say, tell me how much it is. You know, is it $100, $200, whatever it is for the season? Include all the games. Just give me an option to pay to have that service on television, versus forcing me through a online version that is only going to have certain games and has some growing pains. It's definitely Premier League Pass still has a long way to go, but. So if you do have any feedback or questions or comments for us, send those in through us to us through email, and that's web@worldsoccertalk.com, through Twitter @WSoccerTalk, or through Facebook @facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Now, Kartik, let's move on to a feature topic of the week, and this one is an interesting one. I did some research. So this weekend, and this weekend is roughly an average weekend. Some weekends have more games, some weekends have less games. But this particular weekend, there are 166 soccer games available to fans who want to watch the beautiful game on TV or online in the United States. That is incredible in terms of that number. Now, for this weekend, there are 11 MLS games being played. Out of those 11 games, only four of them are scheduled for national broadcasts. And those four games happen to be on one of the biggest weekends on the MLS calendar, with several derbies taking place. So out of the 166 soccer games available in the U.S. this weekend via TV or online, only 2.4% of the games are nationally televised MLS matches. Or another way to look at it is that sports fans in the U.S. can choose between 11 MLS games, four of which are only available nationally, the other seven through regional broadcast or MLS Live. So they can choose between 11 MLS games or 155 games from other leagues from around the world. But in reality, if you don't count those MLS games, I mean, so the games are on MLS Live. It's just four games available. And in a scenario like this, Kartik, it seems to be that MLS is drowning in a sea filled with so many choices of soccer for sports fans from around the world. And those are just the numbers, just the legal numbers. Now, illegal, you mean those numbers will grow even more in terms of how many more matches are available illegally. Now, Kartik, I'll just add one more thing before I get some of your comments on this one, too. This is a quote, and I'll see if you can figure out who this quote is from. And this is a quote from about 4 to 5 years ago. This more soccer on U.S. television than any other sport by far. You've got European soccer. You've got Mexican soccer. You've got Major League Soccer. There's way too much soccer on television. I think all of us have to figure out a way to narrow that window so you can get a situation like the NFL has a couple of days a week, short schedule, something that's very compelling and very targeted. Any thoughts on who said that?
That must have been Commissioner Garber.
Correct, correct. So, Kartik, what do you think? I mean, it's 166 games this weekend. Four of them are going to be nationally televised. Soccer fans, I mean, in the U.S. have more choices than ever before in terms of watching leagues from around the world. How can MLS compete?
Well, they're trying to compete this weekend with Heineken Rivalry Week and with ads all over television. You're a cord cutter now. But if you watch random cable programs, CNN, news on CNN, a show on A&E, you're going to see a commercial for Heineken Rivalry Week. They're going all out. The highlight of this, of course, is the Cascadia. Well, the highlight from my perspective is Cascadia, Portland, Seattle, not the the New York Derby, although I think that's where they're trying to push people, right? That's Friday night. They're trying to compete this weekend. But realistically, is Cascadia going to get the same number as there's a big Premier League game this weekend, right? Everton's playing. Who is it? Liverpool? Oh, yeah. Are they going to get the same number as Liverpool Arsenal? No, they're not. It's very unlikely they do. So that's something they have to deal with. Now, this quote from a couple of years ago where Garber talked about shortening the season, that can never happen because American players are already and American fans hate when I say this because Alexi Lalas jumped up and down when Jurgen Klinsmann said American players weren't fit enough, weren't to play at a high level, in his estimation, from a for the U.S. national team. Now, I think Klinsmann was using it as an excuse because, again, he tactically was a mess. But I don't think American players that come from Major League Soccer, are fit enough to go compete around the calendar in Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, Liga, and those five leagues at least. I don't think they're fit enough, American players. You have to get your level up to a certain point. If you're going to shorten the season and make it a boutique season like the league is in India, the league in India is about 90 days. The league, which has attracted all kinds of stars from Europe, and now you have even coaches like Steve Koppel, guys that Matarazzi was coaching the Chennai team, and et cetera. A bunch of guys have gone there. They competed with MLS for players, then you're not doing anything to help or maintain the fitness levels of your players, of your younger players. And there's a downside, which is the competitiveness of the United States on the international stage, even if you make the season shorter, more meaningful, more relevant. So if you make the season shorter, every game is much more relevant, right? Maybe they have to do what the NASL has done. They have to have a spring and a fall or a winter and a summer. And award a championship based on that. But again, that goes away from the traditional thinking, American sports thinking that the league has. They have an opportunity to make these changes when the next television contract is negotiated. They're going to have to make some changes. They can't continue on this road. I like what I've seen from this playoff format, as we talked about earlier in the show. I think even now, in the middle of this television contract, they may have to make a serious adjustment and move their nationally televised games off of Sunday nights and off of Friday nights and onto Wednesday and Thursday. Yes, that's going to hurt attendance. And MLS has made such a big deal through the years about our attendance being higher than Serie A, being higher than Liga, or maybe they're not higher than Serie A, but they're higher than Serie A if you take Juventus and the two Milan teams out. I think that's the caveat. Mm-hmm. But basically, they've made a big deal for years about that. Oh, our league is actually more popular. We have higher attendance than the NBA or NHL. No, you're not, because you go to Los Angeles, there are more people wearing Chelsea shirts than wearing LA Galaxy shirts. You go to New York, there are more people wearing Real Madrid shirts and wearing New York Red Bull shirts, on and on and on. Your league is not very popular, and those attendance numbers are essentially lies. You know, you're essentially lying to yourself and right, deluding yourself and your fan base.
Yeah,
so my point is, I would start moving games next season to midweek, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, those three nights in particular, and give ESPN a package maybe of their 36 games they show a year, 20 of them be midweek. And then FS1, I don't know what their bandwidth is midweek, but over the summer they all have bandwidth. So do that. I think that's the solution, and I think they're kind of going that direction. Chris, I'm all often saying that MLS isn't responsive and they're living in a vacuum and living in their own world and in denial, but I think this playoff schedule triggers the conversation. I hope that those get decent enough ratings that next season they're thinking Tuesday night is a good night, because I think Tuesday night is a night I'd watch MLS every week, whereas when they're on Sunday, I'm burnt out from Premier League, Bundesliga, La Liga, Serie A. And it's difficult, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think MLS is in a very difficult situation or a position, because even a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, then if you've got Champions League on during the daytime, someone tapes that game, comes home, watches, you mean, Liverpool against, I don't know, AC Milan, whoever it is, there's going to be always kind of those midweek games that could take priority.
Right, and now Champions League is on Turner, which they have no interest in promoting MLS. And when it was a Fox property,
good point,
it might have been a little easier to do this.
Yeah, so I think at the end of the day, I mean, to me, for me, Kartik, if you take the Premier League, I mean, you've got those games on for the US market. You've got them on at 7:30 in the morning, 4:30 Pacific time. You could put those Premier League games, the Premier League could change their schedule, and people would change their behaviors to fit those schedules just to watch those matches because they're so hooked. With MLS, you don't have that same type of passion. Yes, among the fans that support their teams on a local basis, yes. On the television side, you don't have that same type of attachment or kind of a passion. So I think MLS is going to have a tough time no matter what day of the week they put those games on, because you mean, is the quality good enough to pull people in, to change the schedule, to make that a priority? In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. But I just feel sorry for MLS, because in terms of the competition, you look at this weekend, Friday, there's 37 soccer games on, Saturday, 67, and Sunday, 62. Now, the midweek games, there's fewer games on, so there's less competition. So maybe the midweek way for the playoffs is a good solution, which I think it is. We'll have to wait and see what those numbers are. But I just did the research this week, Kartik, for the podcast today, and just wanted to kind of just share some of those eye-opening numbers in terms of the competition that MLS faces. They would argue it's quality over quantity. And yes, this quantity of games, many of them, well, not many, some of them are college games, some of them are very kind of niche leagues that you may watch and find the level of competition not that good. But the reality is that there are a lot of competitive games on this weekend. Not 166, but there's going to be a lot of games there that MLS has to compete with. And as world soccer becomes more popular, and as streaming becomes more accessible, and as more TV networks start to pick up more and more leagues and friendlies and competitions, which they are, it's going to become more fractured and more difficult for MLS to actually compete. So, it's tough times ahead for MLS. All right, Kartik, so where can listeners find you on the internet if they want to send you a tweet or send you a message or follow some of your work?
Yeah, you can find me at Twitter at KKFLA737. You can friend me on Facebook or Google Plus with my name, Kartik Krishnire. Check us out at World Soccer Talk. Other places I write include the Florida Squeeze, FloridaSqueeze.com, Post America, and other places around the web.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.